Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. It's Jamie here, and I hope you're well, and I hope you're having a good summer, despite the weather being, inclement, I think we might say, in the UK for a lot of the time. Thank you so much to those of you who responded to the podcast I did last week, my sobriety unveiled, my 21 insights into 2000 days sober. There's also a blog post associated with that where I share some of these things. I had a really great response. I was really grateful because you never really know how things are going to land. But thank you to those of you who took the time to say that you appreciated it. I hope that some of the insights were beneficial to you, particularly if you're, you know, in the early weeks and months, because I don't know, just having someone to share these things with and to know you're not on your own, it makes a massive difference. In the Sober Club this week, we've had a bunch of people celebrating milestones. I think there was Enid, one of our dear members, was 4 years sober. Somebody else was 2 years, I think. Someone else, a few months. I mean, it really doesn't matter. Every milestone is absolutely amazing, isn't it? And I just grabbed this one comment that one woman wrote. She said, "This club has been the final piece in the jigsaw for me. Everything finally slotted into place after a very long and checkered history of stop, start. Thank you from the bottom of my heart." And it's so true, isn't it? So many of us have been round that block of trying to ditch the booze so many times, and we just have to get to that time, that it just has to feel right for things to click into place. And when you get the right support, I really believe that's when you can literally slot that last bit of the jigsaw in. It really does make just all the difference. So anyways, you know where to find us if you want to join us in the Sober Club, thesoberclub.com. Very easy to find, and just masses of support and inspiration and all the rest of it in there. And I'm really pleased that my guest today is a Sober Club member and someone who came on my Sober Coach training course, which was just fantastic. We have another Sober Coach training in October, which is full. And the next one is January, if that's something of interest to you. Realize that's not for most people, but just to throw it out there, just in case. So I'm going to be chatting to Andy in a moment. Really just a lovely story. I just think it's just so great to get all these different perspectives on what it feels like to be someone who's drinking more than they want to, you know, and who finally cracks it, finally finds that jigsaw piece. Just before I do that, I don't want to forget to tell you about a few dates in addition to the date that Andy's going to share. A few dates just for your diary. The first one to tell you about is September the 24th. We're going to do a Sober by the Sea. It might be the last Sober by the Sea at our venue, our lovely venue in sunny Southend. So come and do that if you can. We create a vision board. It's just amazing for really getting to kind of getting to grips with what it is you want for you, taking a little bit of time out for you. It doesn't matter what stage you're at. You can be sober curious or maybe been sober for absolutely years. Check out the testimonials and come and join us for that if that works for you. And then we did have October the 11th in the diary, but we're now wiping that one out for all kinds of reasons. And now what we have in the diary is Sunday the 15th of October is Family Constellations. You will have heard me talk about it a lot. I do bang on about it quite a lot, but it's one of those things you just have to come and experience. You really do. So if you can make it, it's in Hertfordshire. I work with a leading trauma expert. But you know, we use the word trauma and everyone thinks, oh my God, it's going to be awful, heavy day. It's emotional for sure, but it's very uplifting, and people usually leave feeling open-hearted and inspired and more compassionate and with a completely new perspective on their own life and their relationships and other people in their life. And it just does some magical stuff. So if you can make Constellations, it would be wonderful if you could join us Sunday the 15th of October in Hertfordshire. If you go to thesoberclub.com, you'll find those events. And then moving forward into November, November the 4th is now our Champneys Self-Care and Sobriety Retreat. It's just 2 days where we pack a whole load of amazing self-care stuff in the surroundings of Champneys in Tring in Hertfordshire. So check that one out. That's also under events at the Sober Club. And then into December, we now have our next live podcast recording and meetup. And we're going to make it a Christmas thing. Like, why not? Let's be one of the first people to start to feel a bit Christmassy. So please, will you put in your diary December the 5th? Pencil that in. We'll get the tickets up for sale soon. That one is going to sell out quickly. I'm almost sure I have a fantastic special guest. I'm not going to reveal yet. Just need to make sure. But, oh, man, I'm so excited. I mean, you're going to want to come anyway, but that will just be the absolute icing on the cake. So pop that in the diary, December the 5th, if you can make it to London. Anyway, so that's all the kind of biz stuff. I did also just want to share a couple of the news stories I saw this week. I don't know if you saw, there was that piece on, actually there were a couple of pieces. There was one piece that I contributed to. Somebody asked me for a comment. I forget which mag it was in now. It was all about, should people be allowed to crack open alcohol-free drinks in the workplace? So this kind of piece had come about because I think, you know, with the rise in alcohol-free drinks, you know, obviously they look very similar. So if someone's cracking open an alcohol-free beer, it looks the same as a beer. So the question was, is that okay in the workplace? You know, if you're sitting at your desk and you would perhaps be, I don't know, it's the middle of the afternoon and you crack open a Coke or something, a cola. Is it also okay to be cracking open an alcohol-free beer? Or is that an absolute no-no because it looks like regular beer? So the journalist asked, there are a few people commenting on the piece, and they asked my view. And I said, well, I think if it's a scenario where you would typically be able to drink an alcohol-free drink of any kind, you know, a soft drink, then there is no difference. It's psychologically, it's different. Of course it is. And there are very few people who I think would consider it in any way, anyone would even want to be cracking open their bottle of naughty alcohol-free fizz at 10 a.m. Or even, you know, even sitting at their desk at 2 p.m. It's just kind of odd, isn't it? You kind of don't do it. But if you would typically be in your office or workplace and you typically have your can of cola or lemonade, or your bottle of, I don't know, flavored water or whatever, then I really can't see there's any difference to be having your kombucha, which is also a soft drink, or any AN other alcohol-free drink, as long as it really is an alcohol-free drink. Ah, and then we get into another bit of confusion, don't we? Because, of course, the labelling in the UK is so goddamn confusing that what we mean by an alcohol-free drink is something that's 0.5% or less. So if it's 0%, great. If it's 0.5%, that's still classed as alcohol-free because that means trace of alcohol, which, you know, i.e. same difference as having a banana or some orange juice, right? But you have to be really careful because, of course, this gets confused, certainly in supermarkets, with the low alcohol market, which has drinks that are 4% or 8%, which might be considered, you know, low alcohol. I mean, obviously, clearly, I wouldn't go near them with a barge pole. And that's not what I'm talking about. So anyway, the piece got terribly complicated. But on balance, yeah, in case you're interested, my view is if you'd usually have a Coca-Cola, then then, you know, yeah, what's the difference? There's no difference. Have an alcohol-free drink because there's no difference. Now, we can get into all the nuances of that. If you want to start talking about the sugar or whatever, that's another whole discussion. Anyways, and then the other piece that I saw, I didn't contribute to it, but I saw this interesting piece, I think it was from Sky News, saying that they'd done a study. I don't know quite who decided to do the study, but the study was on they studied a bunch of people, and I don't quite know what tests they used, but the conclusion they came to was that, no, people are not more attractive after you've been drinking. It's just that you become more confident so that you approach them. It's not that they look more attractive to you. It's just that you become more confident so that you will go up and talk to someone who you might find attractive. This piece was, you know, it got lots of publicity. And the piece was basically trying to say, you know, oh, ha ha, you know, we already found that whoever that person was attractive. And now with our newfound confidence of alcohol, we're able to go and approach them. So it's not the beer goggle. It's just that we have this newfound confidence. I mean, what an annoying piece of journalism, really. Really, what the headline needed to say was nobody, but nobody is more attractive with alcohol. Neither the person you're looking at nor you. And you're not more confident either. It's, you know, it's false. What you start to feel, okay, yeah, your inhibitions may be numbed, but that doesn't make you more confident. Certainly not in any way that you'd want to be. Just my little humble opinion of a couple of recent news stories. Anyways, without further ado, I hope you enjoy the interview. My guest is creator, founder of After Party. We're going to find out more about that in a bit. Andy Blackman. Andy, thank you so much for joining us. Lovely to chat to you on the podcast.
Hey, Zena. Yeah, no, I'm really excited to be on here. Thanks for inviting me. It seems quite surreal, really, to be on your podcast. it was quite inspirational for me, you know, through my journey of sobriety. So the fact that I'm on it as a guest is quite surreal. So thank you very much.
Oh, that's brilliant. Well, you obviously trained with me to be a sober coach, so we'll talk more about that later as well. But, you know, there's lots of stuff I want to ask you about. I think your journey has been an interesting one. I think the stuff you're doing now is absolutely fantastic. You know, we really definitely need more guys out in this space. So we'll definitely talk about all of that. But, you know, it'd be quite good to just go back and just take you back in time to what life used to be like, you know, before you are this new person. what was it like back then?
I suppose I can only really like describe it back then is that I felt like it was normal. I grew up in a family of what you would describe as like big drinkers. And I was like surrounded by alcohol from quite an early age. And it was just normal, you know, parties, holidays, involved alcohol. The adults were drinking. And when I naturally then, when I hit my teenage years, I started to drink. And then I went to university, which is where I turned into a bit of a party animal, I suppose. And where possibly, you know, a few eyebrows were raised about.
Where did you go to uni? Because you live in Manchester, don't you now? Where did you go to uni?
Yeah. I'm from Manchester. Yeah, I went to Salford Uni.
Right, right.
And yeah, I got right into the party inside of being a student. And I, like I say, I think a few eyebrows were raised then that, you know, I was quite committed to quite committed to drinking and partying. And then maybe after a big sesh, people would be recovering. I'd be looking for someone who might be wanting to carry on. So I've always sort of found friends who've matched my enthusiasm for drinking, if that makes sense. And then we settled down, so I've got two young children who are 5 and 6, my partner Ellie. We settled down, and then my drinking habit changed. Then I did a social media post about this more recently. Is that when I bought a house, I decided to join a wine club. I liked red wine at the time, And yeah, I've started to take an interest in, particular grapes and how we match certain
I did
wines.
all
And
that. Honestly, it's hilarious, isn't it? It's like we think, oh, now we're all grown up. We can have more expensive wine that's like really good. It's such BS, isn't
yeah, and in a way, it's a little bit of a joke, but it in a way you feel like a more sophisticated drinker, but what but and it feels more like normalized and acceptable. But at the end of the day, I was still, using it for the same reasons, which was, to help me get to sleep, to help me cope with stress. And I was still getting, despite however fine the wine was, I was still getting the negative effects from it, which was the, waking up in the middle of the night feeling anxious and regretting what I might have said the night before or text I might have said and stuff. So it was still the same outcome, but it was just different. It was just a different type of alcohol. And then about 3 years ago, I had a bit of a mental health dip, so I was on treatment for depression and anxiety. I'd gained quite a lot of weight through COVID. We had a family bereavement. And yeah, I was just feeling pretty down and pretty low then. And that was, I suppose, the turning point for me.
Do you think that around that
Around
time
that
then,
time then.
did you actually notice that the alcohol was, impacting? Was that coming into your mind? That hold on a minute, the drinking won't be helping here, because I'm guessing I mean, I know you work within the NHS, but I'm guessing the medical profession wouldn't have pointed that piece out.
I thought maybe in the back of my mind, but because of the friends that I had and the way in which it was completely normalized within my family, and I sort of buried my head in the sand for a long time about that, although I did know in the back of my mind. But there was one particular day when I went to a friend's house and I took with me a bottle of wine. I had a glass of wine and had a meal and then made me excuses to leave. And she asked me why I wanted to leave. And I was honest with her and I said, because I want to finish this bottle of wine because I'm worried if I don't, I won't be able to sleep tonight. And she was so shocked and surprised. Yeah, did you do this often? And I was like, well, yeah, pretty much all the time. And she was like, well, she was dead shocked. She reminded me of all the, very bluntly, of all the negatives. And whilst that wasn't like the wake up call, it was quite surprising to me that, she was from a family that didn't drink like that and found it surprising that I did drink like that. So it was, not the turning point, but certainly, something a bit, it was a moment where it was eye opening, I suppose.
So what was the thing then, or what was the first thing that really got you to thinking, right, this has to stop?
Bottom, so to speak. Like I say, my mental health was deteriorating. I was on medications for anxiety, and I'd had panic attacks and stuff, and my weight had increased. And then it was on a whim. I seen somebody post on Facebook the book, The Alcohol Experiment by Annie Grace, and I think it was after a couple of wines that I bought, impulsively bought this book. It arrived the following day, and I started then what has turned out to be my sobriety journey. So I did the 30 days, and as you know, that book dispels all those myths that we hold around alcohol. It was a really helpful book. But after the 30 days, I just went straight back into old habits. I tried a bit of the moderation bit, where, oh, I'll just drink at the weekend or I'll just have a few, and but that didn't really work out for me. And then I read another, by then I was getting into the podcast side and learning more around alcohol, and I read another book, the Have You Ever Expected Joy of Being
Oh,
Sober?
Catherine's. Yeah,
Yeah,
lovely.
and that in that book she mentions about having a 3 month abstinence, so that's what I went for this 3 month abstinence, and it was then that I really started to feel the benefits from
Yeah,
it.
exactly. Yeah, I think that's, just to interrupt you for a second, I think that's such an important point that I do talk about quite a lot, but you've outlined it really well. The thing that can so often happen is people do these 30-day experiments, or they do Dry January or Sober October, whatever it might be, And often the mindset hasn't really changed. It's just a sort of, well, it's an experiment. And that's absolutely fine, by the way. But what can often happen is that kind of experiment and reading those books can give you the logic around alcohol. So you get that logic piece, oh, it's really bad for me, or my body needs some time off, I need a detox. But nobody's given you that motivation piece as to just how much better life's going to be without any, right? Nobody ever told me, oh my God, you've got such joy to look forward to. Nobody talks about that, right?
Well,
So,
exactly.
she'd say after 3 months that you start to really see some great stuff.
That was definitely happening. And you're right about that mindset shift. It goes from being like a willpower battle to then where I'm at right now, which is like it doesn't seem sensible to me to drink alcohol. It doesn't bring
Yeah, it's
anything to the
just who you
table for
are
me.
to
And
be sober.
when that clicks, it's amazing. But that's taken quite a long time to get
Yeah,
there.
of course. Let me just ask you though, because there will be people thinking, okay, so whether we're talking about the first 30 days or the first 3 months, what was happening within your social circle? Because you're a young guy, you're in Manchester, you were a really big drinker, so there must have been some shifts, some changes in attitude. So how did you cope socially, and how did other people, did you confront sober shamers, or did you, did you find it actually relatively easy to get out back out there?
I suppose like I've been an open book when it comes to being sober. I don't think anyone, certainly in the last 12 months, who have come across doesn't know that I'm sober. I know that's not how everybody goes about it. But when I first started to talk about sobriety and certainly long-term sobriety, initially, I was met with, a bit of negativity, I suppose, because I think one of the things that it inadvertently invites when you tell somebody that you're sober is it holds a mirror up to that person, and not that I want that to happen, but quite often when you tell somebody you're sober, they might tell you that they've become quite defensive about their own drinking, and that's not the conversation I'm inviting, so. I had a few comments like, why would you do that to yourself? And you need something to chill you out. That's a few different, yeah, like a few different negative comments. And then what you might call banter in the pub. So if I'm ordering a non-alcoholic beer, I still get the comments like, oh, calm down, don't have too many of them. They're all right, I can handle that sort of stuff.
So
But
your
yeah, and it.
friendship group didn't really change much. It was okay, was it?
We stayed pretty much the same. I mean, my persona outside has changed a lot because I used to drink heavily and I had quite a reputation for being, quite a party animal, the joker, the person who'd be singing songs and all the rest of it. So that persona's changed and I don't stay out as late. But I've stayed, the friendships I haven't changed. People are gradually getting more used to that. The longer this is going on, the longer my the longer I'm alcohol free, the more I'm becoming this is becoming accepted. And in a way, at the start there was like ne negative comments. Now I'm getting a lot of positive comments, and one of the incredible things that have happened is that just through my action, I've inspired others, even within my family, to start thinking about their own drinking, and so that's been really powerful because I think inspire by action and not by shaming somebody. I think there's some power behind that, and that's definitely what I've experienced.
Yeah, I love that. Well, we'll talk more about that in a moment, but I just want to pick up on something. You mentioned, and I know because you've told me personally, that there was a bereavement in your family that had a big effect on you as well. Is that something you want to share and you want to talk about, just in case it might help anyone else or not? There's no pressure if you'd rather not.
No, it was so. I chose to go sober, with no particular ending in September last year, and that was after quite a boozy August, where we had a holiday in France and a holiday in Italy, pretty much back to back, where I drank daily and I started drinking earlier because I was on the holidays. You know how you do. And looking back, I was making decisions or making alcohol fit in with the plan of the day. So I would, instead of choosing to drive to a beach, I would maybe suggest, well, why don't we just stay by the pool? And then obviously the bar's nearby and stuff like that. So I knew it was controlling my decisions a little bit back then. And at the end of August, I was getting sick of the taste. That happened as well. And so in September, I decided I would quit, and I quite ceremoniously poured away the wine I had. And I was like, that's it. I don't know when I might start drinking again. I'm just going to go for it. And there's a few couple of turning points, and I will get to the question that you asked, but I think getting through Christmas was a real statement of intent, N not just for me, but for the people around me. I think started to realize that, he's taking this quite seriously. He didn't drink over Christmas. And then more recently, we did have a bereavement, a very significant bereavement, a very close man to me, my uncle. And he was admitted to hospital with pancreatitis secondary to alcohol use, is what the medical team told us. And sadly, he died after, it was a very traumatic experience. He had a few weeks in hospital, but like I say, he died, and it was caused by alcohol. But I choose not to name him in this podcast, because I think again that just shows where we are with the stigma, is that I don't want this guy to be defined by alcohol.
Absolutely, yeah.
He drank like the rest of us in the family. He never drank before 6 p.m.
It really is a case of there, but for the grace of God, go I, isn't it? It really is.
And I think, the sad thing is that I don't think he was aware of what he was doing to his body, and I genuinely think that if he did, he would have curbed his drinking, and he would still be here. And it's a really, really sad that side of it. But what also came from that was the around that time, I was obviously struggling a lot emotionally. I could describe my uncle in a 500 words, and alcohol wouldn't come anywhere near it. He was an amazing man, and I was very close to him. So the prospect of losing him, which we had pretty much, we had prior warning that he might not make it through. And I'd psychologically decided that I would drink the day he died, because I didn't think there was another way through it.
You'd plan that in advance.
I'd sort of okayed it. Right, I'll just do it. Well, there's no way I'll be able to do this sober. And then, the day came where he did die, and we did go to the pub, and I remembered something that I'd heard either on a podcast or in a book, and that was to, if you're thinking of, having a drink, always have a non-alcoholic drink first, and then make your decision to drink. So I
Yeah,
did,
exactly.
so I did, so I did that, and I didn't drink on the day that he died. So I got through that, and then obviously the period of grief that followed and continued, I've not drank, and the funeral again was a big occasion that was difficult or different to manage without alcohol. But what I will say around that is that, not drinking alcohol around that time let me really feel the grief and pain, and there was something incredibly empowering about that, if that's the right word,
No, absolutely.
that
Absolutely.
that I, that I didn't just I didn't block it out. And this is no criticism to anyone who's drinking here, but it's my experience was that, I found that quite empowering, although extremely difficult
Well,
emotionally.
because it's totally, because it's ingrained in us, isn't it? That we drink at celebrations, we drink at commiserations, we drink to drown our sorrows, we drink, and on and on. It's so ingrained in us, and I can absolutely see how that thought process would have gone. I will drink, even though the irony of the whole thing, around alcohol, it's it's just crazy. But I'm really glad you shared that, because that's so powerful, that to hear you admit that. Actually, it meant you were able to, that lovely expression, you were able to feel all the feels, right? All that really deep emotion that, we actually, grief is a really important emotion, and just to block it is bonkers, absolutely bonkers. So yeah, you must be really, be able to look back on that and be really grateful that you were able to get through that. And I'm guessing the impact of that again would just that whole experience would just solidify your commitment, I guess.
So they took the words out of my mouth. So I mean, so my uncle's death was 2 weeks prior to the sober coach training.
Oh, really? Wow.
So when I got there, emotionally, I was shot to pieces. But the sober coach training was my first ever time where I had been amongst other people who shared the same thoughts, passions, enthusiasm around becoming alcohol free, and also that we don't need to label ourselves or stigmatize this. And there's I don't use the words recovery or alcoholic or
No.
dependence or anything like that. When you say you stop drinking, people sort of assume that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
That's one thing that happens. But that's certainly not how I felt. And when I was amongst other people who felt like that, especially just how close, it was, from losing my uncle, the combination of those two things, I came away being thinking, this is it.
Yeah, I mean, I love that you're able to feel that kind of energy in the room, because I think one of the things that I try and do with my sober coach training is I really want people to get a lot of personal transformation, as well as, of course, people are coming on the training because they want to train to be able to inspire others and work with other people in whatever capacity. But actually, the reality is you get a lot of personal transformation. And for you being relatively early in your journey, how fantastic to be able to lay those foundation pieces, really.
The combination of the two happening close together, like you said, absolutely solidified. When I drove home from Southend-on-Sea, I knew then that that was it.
And so what's since then, let's just share some of the things that have happened for you, because one of the things you did fairly soon after you did your coach training was connect with some of the other male sober coaches. And I'm guessing I mean, I wasn't party to the whole conversation, but I'm guessing that you just kind of got together and said, we need to bring other guys on board with talking about sobriety. That's the thing, isn't it? I mean, I never know whether it's a cliche or a generalism, but you can tell me. I'm guessing that most of you guys who are now doing this stuff together, these events and everything, would say that within your own circle, men don't tend to talk about this stuff. They tend to keep it a bit more hidden than perhaps than the gals do.
No, it's a valid point, and the sober guys consist of me, Tony, Raina, and Paul. Geographically, we're all over the show.
Yeah,
Obviously,
Paul's in the States. Yeah.
Paul's in the States, but he's coming over. But we'll talk about that soon, won't we? But we have a very close bond, and there's two ways of looking at this, because I think either through my profession or through the friendships I've had in the past or the way I was brought up, I've always been quite open about my and in touch with my emotions and feelings, and felt relatively at ease, reaching out and talking to people about different things. What I've learned from the sober guys is that not everybody's like me, and I knew that before, really. But it's a definite issue. In that, I've heard people's experiences where they've quit the booze and not even told their spouses or friends. They've made excuses to, that they have an illness or they're on medication, so they can't do it. So, and they don't feel like they can say I've quit because there is still this stigma
Well, there is. I
around.
mean, I'm sure you've heard me say on the podcast that when I first quit, I didn't tell anyone because I felt such incredible shame. I don't never used to feel the shame when I was drinking too much, but when I stopped, the shame was huge, and I found it really difficult to tell anybody. So I do understand that.
But I've just done it completely differently, though. I've just been such an open book. There isn't a person who I come across, who doesn't know that I'm sober. But yeah, no, guys, I don't know. We could be here for probably a couple of hours mulling over this one and why it is that men don't. But I think, we're looking at a couple of issues, maybe, a generational issue. So the guys in their 50s and 60s, who were raised by the dads who might have come from like wartime era or like religious backgrounds, and the stiff upper lip, and there was no not as much awareness around mental health, emotions, and struggling. So we've got that generation, and then I think we've got another generation that are more like my age, 30s, 40s, even late 20s, who for whatever reason don't feel able to open up either. But I do know that the problems are there because I've been sat there in someone's kitchen at 3 o'clock in the morning where a guy will spill out all of his problems, become very emotional, but under the influence of alcohol, and really pour the heart out about all the problems, and then you check in with them the following day and they don't want to talk about it. So the problems are there, but breaking down the barriers to that, I suppose that's what with the sober guys is all about. And he's challenging that. He's challenging, that stigma of trying to normalize this conversation and trying to create an environment where guys can feel comfortable talking about it and being vulnerable.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us about, well, you've got an event coming up at the end of October. So you've done a few online things, which has been great, getting free events, getting guys talking, and then you're putting together an event at the end of October, which I'm really thrilled you've invited me to speak. So thank you. I'm looking forward to that. But also, as well as telling us about the event, tell us about your thing, your after party. Fantastic name. Tell us how all of that came about.
Yeah, so okay, so actually, I'll start with after party then. So, I was confused about which name to use for ages, and
Well,
then
when
when.
we just to preempt that, when we finished our kind of core modules on the sober coach training, we go into a whole bunch of sessions around, looking at your who it is you want to work with and what kind of niche you're going to look to, and then obviously lots of people start going, oh, shall I have a name for my business? And those were the conversations that we were having around that time, weren't they?
Absolutely. And then it was weeks before I came up with a name, and I think I came up with a name at about 3 o'clock in the morning. That's one of the things that's happened in the last few months. I can't turn my brain off,
But at least you're
but
not
in a good
waking up
way.
upset that you're drunk.
Well, yeah, no, it's in a good way. I like to have a busy brain. It's helpful, but yeah, when that name came, I thought it really encompasses my experience. After party, I love the fact obviously it's got the AF in it, so
It's
we've got the alcohol
fantastic.
free bit. But the party doesn't end there. Like I still go out to pubs. I still not that often now, but I've quite recently been out to Manchester into a nightclub and stuff like that. But it's like you always say, it's not about giving up anything. It's
Exactly.
all about the
Everything
games,
you're
isn't it?
gaining.
Like, it's all about everything that comes afterwards. And those things are so positive. So After Party, the name represents that,
Yeah, it's
really.
perfect. It's absolutely perfect. I'm always amazed when I work with people and we talk through these ideas of like, okay, what's it going to be for my business? And then a name like that will land, a name that is so perfect, and everyone will be thinking, well, I mean, that's not going to be available for you to use. And of course it's not. And of course it is, because it was always meant for you, right?
Well, I had to do a search afterwards, with After Party on Instagram, but it certainly wasn't about abstinence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's just brilliant.
But what I'm trying to achieve with After Party, obviously, I did my sober coach training with you, so I will be offering at some point. I'm not in any rush. I'm following my nose here, but I will be offering some sober coaching. But I think the main thing for me is around promoting the benefits of going alcohol free, challenging that stigma, and also just to recognize that you really don't have to hit rock bottom before giving up, and that
Exactly,
you don't have to
exactly. Like
label it
that lovely
like.
message that life is better without the booze. Don't wait till everything's terrible, right?
And it's one of the things, like, you quite often that term alcoholic will come up, won't it? When you quit, and you wouldn't call somebody who quit cigarettes a smokeaholic,
No,
would you? Do you know what I mean?
exactly.
And it's that sort of thing that I'm trying to challenge. And you'll
Good.
notice on my post that I don't go into the risks, even though I know you very well through personal experience, as we've discussed, the risks. But I try and focus more on the benefits and inspire people by my action and my experience and how positive that's been. And that's really what After Party is about.
I love it, absolutely love it. So, yeah, tell us about your event then. What's going to be happening, and time and date and all of that. And yeah,
Well,
let's drum up some intro. It'd be great to have a ball in Manchester, all right?
Honestly, I can't wait for it. I never thought, this last 12 months, by the obviously the significant bereavement, has been like the best 12 months of my life. I can't believe where it's taken me and what I've ended up doing. I'm putting on an event in Manchester. There's all the four sober guys are going to be together. So
I know, it's
Paul's
so
flying
brilliant.
in.
Paul's coming from the States. I know, it's so exciting.
Paul's flying in from the States. We've got an amazing venue. The venue manager is actually alcohol free. And
Fantastic.
it came about actually because I was doing some I was going viewing some events, and I was wearing me logoed top, and they had Lucky Saint on draft,
Oh, cool.
and it was a pit stop, really. Well, I went out there with my mum, just having a bit of a recce of different places, and we had a pit stop, and they had Lucky Saint on draft. They had my t-shirt on, and it kick-started this conversation. And then they said, "Oh, our manager's alcohol free." And I thought, "Oh my God, this could work. Have you got an event space?" And I'm like, "Yeah, we've got an event space." And
Amazing.
it's just one of those things that just, like, that synchronicity just sort of happened. But yeah, I'm
Great.
planning on being, obviously the sober guys are going to be there. I'll do a little bit of a talk and introduction. I'm so thankful that you're coming up as well, Janie.
Great. Thank you.
And I'm hoping, it's going to be a couple of hours where we're going to probably spark a little bit of debate and conversation, hopefully inspire people into thinking about sobriety or looking at their alcohol use. It's not it's a, it's a inclusive to anybody, really. It's not just for people who are sober or sober curious. It's for anybody who wants to come to support me, to support the sober guys, or anyone who's been just even slightly intrigued by any of the stuff I've been putting out on social media. I don't know if I mentioned it, but I'm gonna have some live music in between the talks. It's going to be a ticketed event, but we're working on a bit of a package so we can get some samples of alcohol-free drinks and stuff, because there's some amazing alcohol-free options out there as well. So
Brilliant.
yeah, no, really looking forward to it. But as you know, as you definitely know, with event planning, all sorts of stuff has to be sorted
Yeah,
out.
of course. But so the plan is that it's that Sunday afternoon on the 29th of October. And so
Yeah.
do you want to give us a website where people will be able to, buy tickets or find out more information?
Yeah, so we've not sorted that bit out. So the sober guys think we're a work in progress, right?
Okay,
So
yeah.
we're
I mean,
just we're...
we'll have it on the Sober Club events page. We'll have it there.
yeah. I
But if
think
you
we're
want to
gonna get it
point
out there
anyone to a
soon.
yeah,
Yeah,
okay, cool.
we are gonna get it out there soon. We're developing a website for the sober guys, and I think the tickets will be bought through that. But I'll be releasing more information soon. But
Yeah,
yeah, you're
cool.
absolutely right. It's the 29th of October.
Okay.
We've
Well,
got the
by the
event.
time this podcast is live, it maybe the stuff's out there, and I'll pop it in the show notes. But
Oh,
failing
yeah,
that,
that
you
might
can
be
always find
helpful.
it via the Sober Club. So it's super exciting, Andy, isn't it? And as you say, you look back and you just think, oh my God, just this joy that comes from being this newfound clarity and kind of bravery. I mean, I bet you just can't imagine that you would have been planning probably anything, let alone something like
Well,
this,
no,
2 years
honestly,
ago.
like the words like determination, being enthusiastic and proactive. A few years ago, when I was down and what have you, and I'd have never associated those words with me, but I've proved, by ditching the booze and changing things in the way, I'm trying to put myself out there and help other people. Has shown that you can it, alcohol really wasn't holding me back.
Yeah, exactly.
And I
And we haven't
remember
even mentioned you as a dad. I mean, oh my God, just the benefits for parenting, for being alcohol free. Oh God, the benefits are just huge. It's the best parenting hack ever.
yeah, absolutely. I say this it's the consistency, isn't it? So the kids' experience of me, it might have been before, like in an evening, tipsy dad, fun and games, having a laugh and whatever, or what have you. And then, they'd go to bed expecting to have the same, me to wake up with the same sort of enthusiasm I had when they went to bed. But I'd be tired, anxious, lay on the sofa, little energy. I'm not saying I was a bad dad before any of this, but it certainly made a huge difference. I'm up early in the morning, I want to be up, making plans with
Yeah,
the
it's absolutely
kids.
the best modelling you can ever do, and you're so, well, you're not lucky, but I'm jealous that you did it when your kids were young. That's just my biggest regret. If only I'd done this when my kids were younger. It's the best gift you could possibly give them, really is.
Yeah,
Brilliant.
one of the standout things, I've used it on my post, but it's something you it's a phrase that you said, and you said it twice on the Sober Coach training, and it made me feel emotional. It made the hairs stand up on the back of my neck when you said it. And that is that choosing to go alcohol free is the most life changing and liberating decision you have made,
Ever,
and
yeah.
I could not push that message any further. That is so true. And it's, when you said that to me, it just hit me. I was like, wow, you're absolutely spot on.
Yeah, it really is. And how fantastic that you're out there sharing this message. I love it. Fantastic. Thank you so much for being a guest, Andy. I really appreciate it. And it's very exciting, all the stuff you're doing. And looking forward to seeing you in Manchester, if not before. Maybe we'll get you down to London to one of our meetups. We'll try and drag you down. But I'll see you in Manchester if not before. Yeah, thank you so much for being a guest. I really appreciate it. And we'll make sure all of the links go in the show notes as soon as we've got, as soon as they're all ready. So thank
Yeah,
you.
it's been a pleasure, Jamie. Thank you very much.
So thank you, Andy. Now I must tell you how you find Andy on Instagram. It is After Party, but let me give you the handle, as it were, the Instagram handle, because I got it wrong the first time I tagged Andy. And I tagged an after party that we're, as Andy would say, definitely out on the sesh and enjoying the sesh. So Andy's account is af.ter_party. Got that? AF.TER underscore party, and I will make sure I put that in the show notes so it'll be easy for you to find. So hopefully I'll get to see some of you at the event that Andy and some of our sober guys are organizing in Manchester on October the 29th. Really looking forward to speaking at that event. Michael's been going to be there as well, happy with that hooch. So it'd be great to catch up with him again. Normally we're in Southend when we catch up. And just a reminder that before that we have a few events. September 24th, Sober by the Sea. October the 14th, just in case you are a coach, I forgot to say that, a coach or a therapist or a biz owner, I've got a mastermind day on October the 14th. And then Sunday the 15th is Family Constellations in Hertfordshire. Be fantastic to see you for that one. Whatever stage you're at, just a reminder, reach out, because doing this on your own is really hard. And sometimes if you just reach out, makes it feel a bit more real. It just gives you that added layer of accountability when you know, if you've just messaged me, you know, I mean, of course I'd love you to join us in the Sober Club. It would be fantastic if you want to get that support. You can always leave if you don't like it, thesoberclub.com. But if that's not for you, for whatever reason, just reach out anyway. I'll message back if I can. I can't promise I'll reply to everyone, but I'll absolutely do my best. So just send a message, just find me on social media. I'm very easy to find, at Janie Lee Grace, or go to thesoberclub.com, fill in the contact there, and just send me a message and tell me you're doing this, or tell me what stage you're at, tell me what's going on. And just that, just telling somebody else who you know will be cheerleading you, who you know will be holding the vision for you, just gives you that extra little layer of accountability. So then the next day, when the wine witch comes and pops a little head around the corner, and go, oh, hello, you know, you may as well just have one. Don't be so boring. Of course, you've got this now. You don't have a problem. You may as well just have one. You can absolutely stick to one because you don't have a problem. And why would you not? And all of that absolute BS that goes on in your own head. Maybe, just maybe, another little voice will pop up and saying, oh, it was only yesterday I messaged Janie, and oh, so sweet of her. She messaged back and said, fantastic. Okay, holding that vision for you. Oh God, do I really want to stop today? Do I really want to ditch it all today? Do I want to go back to it all today? I don't think so. So just that added layer of accountability, it's really worth it. So don't do what I did in the very early days and hole up. Tell somebody. Just tell somebody. And if you don't want to join the Sober Club, but you do want to support this work, that's hugely appreciated. You can go to buymeacoffee.com/genuinelygrace, and mine will be a flat white. And of course, I'd rather have it in person with you. So I hope we get to meet at one of the events we've got coming up in the not too distant future. Oh, and by the way, we'll also be doing a Family Constellations online. So those of you who are in the US and wherever, and you just really can't get here for Constellations, we will do one online for those people who you will make it a time that works. So yeah, hopefully one way or another, I'm going to get to meet lots of you, whether that's online or in person, within the next few months. And next week is my 250th episode. I told you it was this week. I've got to get it right. It was yeah, we did our event three weeks early. So next week is the 250th episode, when you'll get to hear Claire Pooley, Laura Willoughby, William Porter, and you'll get to hear our bits and bobs from our live event. So I'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.